Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
I didn't march 1 yard, 1 foot for the same sex to get married, and they're taking wrong and making it right, and taking right, making it wrong.
Those of us who are inspired by Judeo-Christian values, we're not seeking to sit in judgment of anyone. But we know that there are fundamental truths proven through thousands of years of human history.
I refer to Joel Osteen's theology of the tyranny of positive thinking, where everybody must say positive things and think positive thoughts in order to be blessed by God.
That's the difference between preaching about Christ, where you basically just cut him apart and use him however you see fit, versus preaching Christ.
Pro Football Hall of Fame wives, love Issues, etc.
I have no doubt about it that this story is a top five religion story. It's a top five story. The Supreme Court decision, and especially a decision dealing with something as basic as religious liberty, is always going to be a big story for any year. But the Hobby Lobby case recently decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. What, by the way, did it actually decide? Did it cover all the bases when it comes to the way that the Health and Human Services contraception mandate might infringe upon the religious liberties of corporations or individuals or other groups that may not have been considered? It's a big story. There's no doubt about it. How has the press done so far with a few days to think about it? And the press has had a few days to mull it over. How have they done in explaining the logic of the Hobby Lobby decision made by the U.S. Supreme Court? Greetings and happy Independence Day. I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome to Issues Etc. Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org will be our guest here in the first half hour or so. We're going to be talking about media coverage of the Supreme Court's ruling on the Hobby Lobby case. A little bit later, Pastor Jordan McKinley joins us. We'll talk about fathers teaching their children the catechism, putting the catechism back into the home, into the hands of fathers and their kids. And then we'll round off this Friday afternoon with part two of our five-part series on preaching today, Martin Luther on preaching. Dr. Ed Gremenstein, who has a doctorate in preaching, homiletics from the University of Toronto, will be our guest in the second hour of Issues Etc. Terry Mattingly is a regular guest. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he is founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
So far, we've had a couple of days here to look at it. The press has had a couple of days to talk about it. Has the press explained the logic of the court's Hobby Lobby decision sufficiently?
You know, what I think is interesting, that their coverage of the case, in other words, by that, the words on the page, their coverage of the case has actually been pretty good, in my personal opinion. In large part because the case really pivoted on this entire corporations as people angle. And for political reporters in Washington, that immediately links into campaign finance and yada, yada. They know the politics of all that. The court didn't specifically come right out at the first and say, we're deciding this for First Amendment issues. We're deciding this broadly. And the press noted that, and that's an accurate reflection of what the court did. So I would argue that what the press has failed to do is notice the complexity and what at Get Religion we have kept citing as the three different levels of the HHS mandate story. The fact that this isn't just about Hobby Lobby, that there are other cases that don't fit this paradigm. And in fact, I would argue that Hobby Lobby, the rights of a closely held corporation and its owners, for me, that was the least certain of the church-state situations involving this case. That was the one, I mean, if Hobby Lobby had lost, as a church-state person, I would have been disappointed because the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, you know, was meant to cover that. I mean, that was in the original intent of something that, of course, when it came out of the Senate years ago, only had three people vote against it, something that used to be very non-controversial. Parentheses, it does seem that the press is much more likely to support religious liberty at the level of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act when it's in favor of Native Americans being able to use certain forms of drugs in worship services than it is to defending the rights of traditional religious believers, whether they're Jewish, Christian, Muslim, or whatever, to defend their own beliefs. Peyote, yes. Evangelicals and, you know, and corporations, no. So we have kind of an irony there. So the three levels that we've continued to point at, let me just briefly refresh them in your mind. Number one is that you do have religious organizations that are defined by worship and are directly linked to institutions that worship. And the White House from the beginning has said those guys are exempt. But see, the White House is defining freedom of worship as opposed to freedom of religion or free exercise of religion. That's a controversy that's been going on now for years. The other complication, and I just clicked a post on an item at Get Religion to go up talking about this. The other complication is the Supreme Court has never been fond of trying to define what worship is and is not, other than things that commit fraud, things that make a profit, and things that are a clear threat to life and health. The court has never been anxious to define limitations on religion, and in particular to define what is and isn't worship. So this gets us to the second category. The second category is doctrinally defined ministries, nonprofits, and also schools that interact with the public to some degree, yet their work is defined by the doctrines and traditions of their faith, and they're asking that the government not require them to encourage or to cooperate in the violation of those doctrines. The stalking horse for this, the case study, the picture group for this is the Little Sisters of the Poor. You know, in effect giving us the White House versus the Little Sisters of the Poor. And I've been writing about that now for several years, but there are at least 50 of these cases, 100 if you draw it slightly broader, percolating out there. And the Supreme Court case did not address that issue. In fact, the majority decision seemed to suggest that the current compromise offered by the White House is enough. Yet other people have quickly jumped in to say, no, the language doesn't say that specifically. It's just using it as an example of an attempt by the government to give these sorts of religious ministries a door out of the conflict. So first we got clearly worshiping communities. Second, we've got ministries, nonprofits, and schools that are doctrinally defined voluntary associations. And they don't want the government to require them to cooperate or to encourage or to hand people, no matter who funds it, hand things to the members of their voluntary association, materials or services that help them violate the doctrines and the life, the vows of the community that these people voluntarily joined. The third is the closely held for-profit groups, the Hobby Lobby case, which has just been, you know, addressed by the court clearly. So what I'm arguing is that there have been very few closely held corporations that have sought this exemption. I think it's important to note that there have been no non-family corporations that have sought an exemption. Even the government's handed, you know, grandfather clauses to some, but nobody's asked for that for religious reasons in the for-profit world broadly defined. It's just a few closely held, family-owned, religiously owned families. Religious families that own corporations have asked for that. I know this is complicated, so thank you for hanging in there with me.
Well,
that group has been explained pretty well. What we're missing is that the next story is group two, the ministries and their status.
So in a nutshell, it sounds like the Hobby Lobby one became the kind of the trial case here, simply because and is most easily understood by the press.
Yeah,
because its category is pretty easy. It's this is kind of the American dream. Family owns a corporation. Family owned, not it's like you said, closely held, and they have religious scruples. This is all the kind of stuff, the storytelling they're used to doing. The storytelling they're not used to doing is Little Sisters of the Poor, where actual doctrines really are in play when it comes to, it's not just my morals, it's actual teachings of the church that define the group and that come into play with things like the HHS mandate.
Right, and that the government is asking that these services be provided to members of that voluntary association in violation of the vows they allegedly have taken. I mean, for example, you're going to have a student health care plan at Wheaton College, and the government is saying, we're not going to ask you to fund it. We're just going to ask you to sign a document that says that you recognize that the government will now require your health care provider to fund all of these contraceptive services, including morning after pills, sterilizations, etc., even though that violates the covenant that your students and employees have voluntarily signed to join your community. The government is now going to force you to encourage and cooperate the splitting of your own community in terms of these behaviors. Now, that's hard to explain. Meanwhile, the White House has a set of talking points out there. And what I find disturbing as a journalist, I don't expect newspapers to take the side of these ministries. I do expect newspapers to allow these ministries to explain their objections in their own religious language. What we're seeing consistently, I just put up a post criticizing an Associated Press report on this score, we're seeing mainstream reports that just repeat the talking points of the White House stating that this issue is settled. And now, or I should say yesterday, we have the White House essentially saying, thank you to the Supreme Court for agreeing with it. And there's a lot of dissent out there about whether the court did, in fact, just endorse this White House alleged compromise. So, once again, it's Category 2. It's the Little Sisters of the Poor. It's Wheaton College. It's these ministries that interact with the public in some way. Because of their doctrines, they interact with the public, but they want to interact with the public in a way that does not violate their community standards. Voluntary communities, I should note.
Terry Mattingly is our guest on this Friday afternoon, July the 4th. I'm Todd Wilkin. When we come back, there's a word that's being used by the press, by the advocates for religious freedom as well. The term is accommodation. We'll see what Terry's concerns are about how that particular word is being used by the media. Stay tuned.
No matter the size, big or small, RP Lumber can deliver it all. From pickups to one tons to box trucks and booms. Everywhere you look, you see blue. RP Blue. RP prides itself in customer service. RP will deliver quality products to your home, business, or job site. And you can be sure of timely delivery on clean trucks with courteous drivers. So when you think of service, think blue. RP Blue. With over 50 local community locations, for 37 years, RP Lumber.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler, or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Martin Luther taught that the chief function of music and worship was the proclamation of the Word of God. With Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church, you will hear over two centuries of Lutheran musical theology, beautifully performed and faithfully sung. For a limited time, save 10% on this 4-CD set when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music. Brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Independence Day. We're talking with Terry Mattingly, getting his thoughts on the media's coverage of the Hobby Lobby case, the Health and Human Services contraception mandate. Terry, there's a term that's being used all over the place, and I wonder what you think about it and how the media are using it. Accommodation. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think it's perfectly right for the White House to explain what it means by an accommodation and to explain why it thinks it's adequate. That's part of the journalistic process. That's fine. I'm all about that. Go for it. The problem is that's the only point of view being quoted. We're not hearing from these ministries very often why they think the accommodation is not really an accommodation that represents their doctrinal point of view and represents their religious freedom. We're getting half the debate. That's my point. So accommodation is being adequately defined from the viewpoint of the White House. It's just not being defined the way it's seen by the very groups that are bringing the lawsuits. Is that clear?
Yeah. How do we explain this to, and I mean, I understand your categories. I understand the distinction between worshiping communities, doctrinally defined organizations, mm-hmm. for-profit corporations that are owned by private individuals who have religious scruples. I understand those three and the distinction.
The three levels.
How does the media go about making that distinction? Do we need simply a story that says, by the way, this isn't over. Look at this picture of the Little Sisters of the Poor. Let us explain to you what this is and why the court may have not made a decision sufficient to cover them.
Yeah. I think it can be done in a paragraph. I mean, you at this point can say from the beginning, worship communities and groups and institutions directly tied to them have been granted an exemption by the White House. Now the Supreme Court has settled the issue of closely held, you know, for-profit organizations with religious owners. What remains unsettled is the status of a wide range of religious ministries who believe the government has not adequately addressed their concerns about the funding of these services. You could even say that the leaders of these groups believe the government is asking them to cooperate in sin. That's a pretty nice headline. and that's what they're saying, especially the Catholics. I mean, evangelicals, let's take Wheaton College again. Evangelicals doesn't mind providing contraceptives and things to its married employees. Wheaton College does not want to be required to make available, no matter who's funding it, and that's a mysterious proposition, no matter who's funding it, Wheaton does not want to make available to its students a health care plan that includes a wide range of contraceptives and other things that, in effect, would help them violate the covenant they signed when they became a student at Wheaton. Now, does Wheaton want to hire private investigators and go out and investigate the private lives of these students and find out if either their parents' health care plans or the local Planned Parenthood or anybody else is giving them contraceptives? I don't hear Wheaton saying that it wants to do that or expects to do that. Wheaton and other Christian colleges, and of course I say this as a faculty member at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, these institutions don't want to cooperate in the undermining of their own beliefs. Period.
So is there going to be another case for the Supreme Court to decide on this religious liberty issue?
It looks like there will be, and of course there's a number of cases, including the Little Sisters, crawling toward the court. What's going to be really interesting is if the court refuses to take that case, saying, hey, we already settled that in Hobby Lobby, even though the lawyers now on both sides, including the White House and including these other ministries, disagree with what the Hobby Lobby case said on that point. So there is potential here for a tremendous amount of confusion and ongoing litigation. What I'm saying to journalists is, even while the tsunami of venom continues to be sprayed, that's a nice mixed metaphor, the tsunami of venom continues to roll over us journalistically about Hobby Lobby, the next story has not been settled. And editors, producers at TV stations, website directors, these people need to find out, do I have a Little Sisters model group sitting in my zip code, and should I be covering that story? And I would add, just to journalistically speaking, this is one of the big mantras that get religion. Are we prepared to cover that story in a way that accurately represents the voices and beliefs of people on both sides? Or are we simply going to crank out PR releases for the White House?
Focusing then on Hobby Lobby itself, you've been watching the coverage before and after. Some people seemed surprised with the court's decision here. There was an awful lot of surprise being expressed in the early media coverage of the Hobby Lobby mm-hmm. decision. What's your assessment of how that case itself, laying aside the other two categories, but that third category, the Hobby Lobby example, how do you think it was covered, Terry?
Well, I think what caught everybody off guard was how this is all linked to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And you have just to have a little bit of history here. I mean, in the Clinton-Gore years, which is not exactly the kingdom of the religious right, in the Clinton-Gore years, you had this vital, vibrant, diverse coalition in favor of religious liberty. And, I mean, like I said, when that came out, there were three votes against it in the U.S. Senate, if I remember correctly. That's a pretty big consensus. Yet what has happened since then is Obamacare and specifically gay marriage. And all of a sudden, that church-state coalition, left and right, everybody from the Unitarians to the Concerned Women for America, that coalition has been shattered, crushed. It no longer exists. And thus, the press is sitting looking at this going, well, what is religious liberty? I mean, we don't like these conservative religious groups. They must be wrong. They must really not be suffering from a violation of their religious liberty. What is this really all about? And we've seen it be about health care. We've seen it be about Obama. We've seen it about a lot of things, the war on women, etc. I think the press is confused by a bigger issue, and I'm going to state this very bluntly and very sarcastically. I think what's at stake is a simple question. Does the First Amendment apply to religious conservatives? You've heard me, you know, in a previous broadcast, you and I talked about this, that series of questions I've been asking at Get Religion now for a couple of years. And it goes like this. You remember this. What do you call a person who is soft on free speech? What do you call a person who is soft on voluntary association? And what do you call a person who is soft, willing to compromise a lot, on religious liberty? The point I'm making is I don't know what you call those people. But in the history of American political thought, the accurate term to describe them is not liberal. The defense of First Amendment freedoms, broadly defined, all the way to Nazis marching through the suburb of Skokie, you know, past the porches of Holocaust survivors. First Amendment freedoms, broadly defined, free speech, freedom of association, religious liberty. That's been the essence of American liberalism, to defend those broadly, right? Now, all of a sudden, nobody seems sure about that. I mean, do we want to defend the rights of a photographer in one of those wedding cases? Do we want to defend free speech? I mean, you know, up in Canada, which I know does not have the First Amendment in the same form we do, remember that you had a Catholic priest kind of sent to community re-education camp for defending the teachings of the Catholic Church in his own church newsletter. Right now, people are very uncomfortable with the First Amendment. And the people who are uncomfortable with it are on the left. And that used to be the people who loved it the most. While conservatives worried about the ability of Penthouse magazine to make fun of Jerry Falwell, and conservatives worried about whether the First Amendment went too far, up is down, down is up, black is white, conservative is liberal, liberal is conservative. This is why I think the press is confused.
Terry, with only a minute here, there's a book there. I mean, you know that. There's a book there to try and describe that shift of not just the definition of liberal, but the definition of conservative as well. What would you call someone who's soft on those liberties? I mean,
well,
to press you on it.
Well, I don't have a word. I don't have a word. I'm frustrated. The book has already been written. We simply need the author to now apply it to these cases. And the book, of course, is James Davison Hunter's Culture Wars, The Struggles to Define America. Book's already been written. It's all in there. It simply has to be applied now to the new legal marketplace.
Do you see anyone in the press who, even just one little candle there in the darkness, do you see anyone in the press who understands that bigger issue here, that the question that you posed there so bluntly, does religious liberty, do these liberties, that triad of liberties that you described there, do they apply to religious conservatives? Do you see anybody who gets that?
Well, yeah, there's lots of them, but they're in opinion journalism at this point. Ross Douthat at the New York Times would be the best example. And on the cultural left, I think Jonathan Rauch, you know, a gay writer, has done a great job of asking the gay community, wait a minute, wait just a minute. Do we really want to live in a land where the First Amendment has been this watered down? Are we willing to be tolerant of people that we believe are intolerant? We've won the gay marriage battle. Are we now going to neuter the First Amendment for people who still disagree with us? Yeah, there are some voices out there, but there's not many of them getting into the hard news copy that's driving this story.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He authors the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here again.
When we come back, we're going to round off this first hour of Issues Etc. on this Friday, July the 4th, Independence Day, talking about fathers teaching their children the catechism. Pastor Jordan McKinley will be our guest. Then in hour two, it'll be part two of our five-part series on preaching, Martin Luther on preaching, with Dr. Ed Gremenstein.
The uniqueness of Lutheranism is that it gets the New Testament doctrine of justification like nobody else.
Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
It's also taught among us that we cannot obtain forgiveness of sin and righteousness before God by our own merits, works, or satisfactions, but that we receive forgiveness of sin and become righteous before God by grace. For Christ's sake, through faith. Don't lose heart. You're not crazy. You're just an Orthodox Lutheran. Be faithful, be kind, and be Orthodox.
You can listen to President Harrison's presentation and all of the speakers at the Making the Case conference on a new audio DVD. We'll send it to you for a $300 donation to Issues Etc. before Labor Day. For more information, look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
Hello, I'm Pastor Daniel Quinn, Senior Pastor of Living Word Lutheran Church, The Woodlands, Texas, inviting you to join us for divine service on Sundays at 8:15 or 11 a.m. Living Word is located at 9500 North Panther Creek Drive in The Woodlands, a community about 30 miles north of Houston. That's Living Word Lutheran Church, where we proclaim the living word of Christ, that all who hear may walk in newness of life.
Imagine steadfastlutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub. Your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm, so check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri. Calvary Lutheran, Elgin, Illinois. Advent Lutheran, Zionsville, Indiana. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Worth, Texas. Holy Cross Lutheran, Albany, Oregon. St. John's Lutheran, Evanston, Indiana. Mount Calvary Lutheran, San Antonio, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Boise, Idaho. Village Lutheran, Ladue, Missouri. Emmanuel Lutheran, Osceola, Iowa. St. Paul Lutheran, Clarinda, Iowa. Trinity Lutheran, Lebanon, Missouri. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Excelsior Springs, Missouri. The Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Cupertino, California. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Freeburg, Illinois. And Peace Lutheran, Neenah, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Support, the Issues Etc. 300.